always be learning and
Okay.
continuously evolving for sure. I think it's crucial to establish a strong foundation for your brand, whether it's in the beauty industry, in the athletic industry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's segment right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. If this is your first time here rocking with us, welcome. Glad that you're able to join us inside of the house. I am your host and curator, Megan Young Gamble, Chief Project Officer at GLC, and the host of this lovely podcast. And guys, I am so excited to speak with a brand owner and a founder of a skincare company. And so I have powerhouse guest, Ms. Carolina Lopez. She is the CEO and founder of Bijou Skincare, which is a clean beauty skincare collection that offers high efficacy products with specially curated ingredients from South America. So the brand was born after Carolina overcame depression and anxiety by ensuring that she was really creating her own sanctuary centered around wellness and self-care. And so, inspired by her South American heritage, Bijou's skincare embraces the exotic richness of South American ingredients that prioritizes natural, organic, and sustainable practices, because we're going to talk about it here, that's really catering to sensitive, hypoallergenic skin and steering clear of harmful and alcohol-based ingredients. And so, guys, pleasure to have CEO and founder, Ms. Carolina Lopez. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to get into our conversations because there's a lot of hot topics we're seeing within the beauty space that we're definitely going to get into for today. And so
Definitely.
to kick us off for our introduction, share a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background because you do have some engineering background. You know,
Yes.
share with us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, definitely. So I basically started with a material science and supply chain engineering, but I also did chemical engineering. Then I became a skincare founder, and this has been a fascinating evolution for me, right? I actually didn't know that I was going to be a skincare founder, and this all happened because my dad is an alcoholic abusive. We fled from Colombia due to the guerrilla warfare being kidnapped. And then I was like, you know, I'm gonna be living the American dream here in the United States. I decided to pursue chemical engineering for my undergrad and then for my master's material science and engineering. And as I would hide in my anxiety and depression, also having a verbally and physically abusive parent, it was really hard. And I would put all this creams on my face, and I realized that I was getting allergic reactions. I actually go to the hospital and it's really bad, and I look like Hitch. Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly like that, and worse. And I can't breathe because my throat really closes. Seeing that my family had cystic acne and rosacea, I was like, there's something that I have to do about this. This is only causing me to have more depression. Then I realized that greater than 120 billion of recycled materials just in the beauty industry never gets recycled. And this is how I ended up here being a skincare founder.
Wow. So let's just pause and just go back like over what you mentioned. So first, brilliant girl. Okay. So engineering background. So I always love seeing women of color who are in science. My undergrad is in chemistry, and one of my sisters studied engineering as well. So I feel like seeing women in STEM is powerful, right? So kudos to you, you know, with your bachelor's in engineering, chemical engineering, and then also getting your master's in material science. Second thing that I would like to just point out that I think a lot of people really don't understand the importance of is if you're living in a situation where it's physically and verbally abusive, like what you do and the things that you don't think about. I myself grew up in a similar household, you know, with a parent that was abusive verbally and physically. And so with that, you feel like there is no way out, right? You feel like you're locked and you're really confined to those areas. But we are testaments that, you know, with a lot of sacrifice, a lot of hard work, you can overcome those things. And it's really big to really understand and stress the importance of how to get out of those situations and how to overcome from mental health and depression and anxiety, because it's something that's very prevalent and heavy, especially in today's society. So I just want to say, you know, congratulations to you and your family for getting out and also making a new way and a new path for you all here in America as well. So I just want to give you your flowers to say that.
Thank you so much. It means the world. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with you having your background in chemical engineering and then also your material science background, share with me a little bit about what you've seen over your years of experience and how that really transfers over into you now being a skincare founder.
For sure. So just having a material science engineering background, we specialize in understanding the properties and the behaviors of the different materials, which means if there's a specific product or material, for example, the packaging, right? And it's getting shipped somewhere, right? We have to understand, okay, how is the temperature going to change? What's its tensile strength, its compression strength during shipping purposes, right? When is it going to fracture, to have an understanding, is this heavy enough or not, right? To have an understanding of what could happen during shipping purposes or environmental drastic changes, such as snowing or dry, really dry heat, like here in Arizona, where it gets 120 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. So this knowledge has been extremely foundational also with my chemical engineering to know the intricacies of skincare ingredients and create formulations that are good and safe. By safe, right? Because there's different meanings in the industry. I mean, they're not harmful for your hormone disruptors, don't cause cancer, right? There's different types of raw materials that are used that are synthetic and are not really good for you. And a lot of customers, or I like to call my customers celebrities, don't know this. And this is extremely important, right? To provide something that's both effective, safe, could last, be sustainable, and be prolonging for you.
So you mentioned a lot, because hormone disruptors within the beauty space is a big conversation. And I remember there was a movie or a documentary that came out with HBO where Kiki Palmer was the host, Clean Beauty, where they're specifically talking about like the impact of different beauty products, the raw ingredients, some of the synthetic products or ingredients that are utilized that can cause hormone disruptors. And so just understanding like your baseline knowledge of, you know, really tapping into like your engineering background, understanding the importance of material science and creating more intentional and clean products. Like, how do you really think about the conversations when you're working with contract manufacturers to make sure that, number one, they're sustainable? The second part of that is how they're creating sustainable products centered around the formulas to make sure that they're clean.
So to disclose that, it's tough conversations to have with them, right? Because they have experience, they have multiple big, huge firms that they already work on. So me, one person, right, coming into a manufacturer and saying, no, I do not agree with this, you know, it's a tough and challenging conversation that you have to be able to communicate well, number one. But number two, I am the formulator of my formulas for Bijou. So I came in with, hey, these are my formulations. I want to make sure that if I do have this contract with the manufacturer, that they're still going to be my formulations, whether we do a contract and I proceed with you or not. So it's really challenging to challenge them as well and show them. Actually, I had to do a lot of research and prove myself to them with like a specific, like, for example, if you have to show data. So information like, hey, this raw material is not good for you. I had to go ahead and do research and show them this is wrong because this and this and this is not going to pass the specific certifications. Or sometimes in the databases, they would have raw material, let's say that it's 20 years old, but the NC name has changed. So different situations like that where, yes, I'm a one person, but I was actually teaching the manufacturer how maybe during time they've been so busy that they haven't grown or evolved over time.
And so just curious, like as you're educating contract manufacturers, especially with your background, like have they been receptive to, some of the information you're sharing, or are they giving you pushback on it? Like, what does that look like for you?
It's been both. They've been actually, sometimes they've been really great at it, where it's, yes, thank you so much. We hadn't noticed that the NC name had changed and now it's been updated. And I sent the data sheet, or there's a specific like website that you could go and double check, right? So that was really great. But there's also where they're giving you, stress, sheer stress, right, between you and the manufacturer, and they don't want to listen. So that's when you have to go in and, be smart about it, provide the data, and not necessarily prove them wrong, but maybe just educate them and growing together, right, upholding one another. Because at the end of the day, you're supposed to be a team, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all about collaboration. And I think having those hard conversations up front definitely helps set the trend and the tone of how you will work throughout that engagement. And it's going to be stressful. I tell some of my clients, this is just part of the industry. You have to have those hard conversations, because if you're not having them up front, you're going to go through development and potentially produce something that you're not really feeling. You're not really bought into. You're looking at some of the inkies or the ingredients, and you're like, this is not it. And even to the packaging, the aesthetics of it, the functionality of the packaging, thinking about environmental, physical conditions, to think about how the transit mode, from Arizona to where I live in Georgia, what that looks like, in the summertime, where you may be going through Texas, where it's blazing hot all the way to Georgia, or if it's going to New York in the winter months. You have to think about all of those elements at the end of the day. But I'm glad to hear that you're staying firm and true to like your products and the output and the intention around it, especially around, how you use skincare as a form of self-care for your own sanctuary. So I think that's very fascinating, and kudos to you. And so as you're having these conversations with contract manufacturers, I'm sure you're hearing about Mocra right now, right? And so what that looks like, all of those things. So how are you as a brand owner staying abreast about all the different Mocra regulations to ensure that your products are compliant and the information on your packaging is compliant?
So that's a really good question. I actually based my formulations on harsher or like stricter regulations rather than the FDA. Here in the United States, the FDA, it's not very well properly regulated. It's too lenient. They're working on improving it. So I've based the regulations based on European regulations, South American regulations, which are stricter, and they already have that encompassed within it, right? So like, for example, if you want to sell in South America, which we're not there yet, but we're working towards it, right? You have to have a specific, for each country that you want to go to, you have to get your specific certifications, right? Each country has to approve to you. Mm-hmm. And it's called, like, for example, in Colombia, it's called the ENVIMA. And you have to get that approved for you to be able to sell any products, anything that's considered beauty. This is not necessarily considered, how there's a difference between cosmetics and medicine. So this is just for cosmetics specifically.
Okay. So it sounds like you're having to do a lot of extensive research to ensure that your products and your formulations are compliant with EU, Latin America, and stuff like that. So do you have a regulatory specialist or consultant that's part of your team, or are you doing this all on your own?
I started all on my own. Right now I have somebody who helps me, but yes, for the most part, 90% of the work, I've done it all on my own.
Wow.
Learning as well, right? Like learning myself, like, okay, what are the requirements in this country versus this one? And how could I make sure that everything is intertwined together, that all the raw materials and the ingredients and the certifications that I want to obtain for Bijou itself are qualified in the United States, right? But they're also qualified in Europe.
I think that's big. And I think that's really a big area of opportunity for brand owners like yourself to really adopt that same philosophy that you're doing. Start working and creating products that are compliant for other markets, that especially if you plan on expanding to those markets. So like for you, you're basing and creating your products centered around EU regulations. Mocra is still in place for US, rightfully so. But to your point, it's more regulations, you know, from an EU perspective, and also in Latin Americas. So I think if you're a brand owner and you're not incorporating the same philosophy that Carolina is doing present day, please start doing so. It will help set you up for greater success, better conversations, those hard conversations up front with your contract manufacturers, raw ingredient material suppliers, packaging vendors, because you want to, at the end of the day, creating a product takes a lot of capital, right? It is not a something that you can put $100 in and expect to get $100 million back. It's takes thousands of dollars, you know, to really create intentional products. But if you're doing these things up front, it's going to help you all be set up for greater success down the road. Mm-hmm. And so I want to say, keep doing what you're doing, girl, because it's definitely going to help with creation of your products. And so I have to ask you, you know, I shared a little bit about your introduction at the beginning, but I want to hear specifically from you, like, what inspired you to create Bijou? And you know, what is it rooted around, like, from your perspective?
It's extremely personal, definitely. Bijou comes from the inspiration, first of all, of beauty, right? I love the sunrises and the sunsets, and it would be my safe place to go when I would be having anxiety and depression and not have anyone around me. It symbolizes new beginnings and rejuvenation to provide a support system. Bijou is here to uplift one another. If you're having anxiety, depression, if your self-esteem is low, if you have low self-love, right? Because if your cup of water is not filled, I don't have 100% love. I can't provide 100% love. And I'm going to take things personal, right? And react in a way that I wouldn't if I would feel 100%, you know? So Bijou is a celebration of beauty's purest form. Right, where I like to call it the Bijou trifecta, which is your skin, mind, and body. And we intertwine skincare, meds, nutrition, and mental wellness. And this was built and born out of a vision to create a skincare that comprehends about you and tenderly cares for you just as you are, right? And that's where the slogan also came from, Believably You.
And so is that what Bijou means?
Bijou. So the definition of Bijou, it's from, I did different surveys with 80 people in different countries, Europe, South America, the US, Australia. And basically based on the surveys, I was between three different names. Bijou is for the word to be. So be, and shoe is you in Dutch. But because I knew that I wanted to represent something in South America, but also in the United States, if you say Bijou, it kind of sounds like be you, but really in Italian, it means little jewel, right? In South America, they're going to be able to say Bijou. So it's also the inner self of being yourself, right? Of the divinity of growing your inner self and creating that transformational support that you need over time and evolution as a person inwardly.
I love that. And look at Bijou now. So I love that. And thank you for sharing like what it means and like the different meanings and interpretations like across Dutch, Italian, and even across the surveys you've taken of people all around the world. So I think that's really profound. And so looking at your website and seeing your history and your journey thus far, I've seen you going through your own iterations of packaging and like the aesthetics of your brand. And so share with us a little bit from a brand owner's perspective, like what things you thought about as your brand was evolving to be the jewel, to be you, and to help with like people understanding how to be them true selves, to be rejuvenated, incorporating the Bijou trifecta, skin, mind, and body.
Well, it's still a work in progress as we continue to evolve, right? We need to continue to evolve, but sustainability is at the core of our brand, right? And for me, because I think it's important to define what sustainability is and what it means is, and obviously having a background in engineering, it's reducing, reusing, recycling, and recovering the resources to minimize our environmental impact. So not only are we helping our community, our friends, and our loved ones, but we're also helping the environmental impact across the earth, right? So we prioritize reducing carbon footprint by manufacturing here in the US, right? Implementing sustainable practices throughout our supply chain. So meaning I could have a manufacturer here and then my warehouse 2,000 miles away, right? That's going to increase my carbon footprint. But if I have it 2 miles away, then I'm also reducing the carbon footprint, taking into consideration, okay, what certifications does the manufacturer have, and what type of processes are they using to be able to not only just with creating the raw materials or the formulations, but also the packaging. What are they using? Because, right, we also have to take that into account. Sometimes, whenever they're creating something, they're using high power or electricity that it's not being environmental conscious, which a lot of people don't tend to take that into account, right? Another aspect is reducing the waste management, incorporating eco-friendly packaging solutions such as refillable packaging that we have, sugarcane packaging for our secondary. And then in regards to being bijou and how important you are is providing those wellness supports, right? Like after you buy 5 products, you get free one-on-one psychologist courses, you get nutrition. We're going to be enrolling into providing a 2 weeks of fitness, right? So that we're incorporating all this wellness within ourselves, within us, because we need to believe in ourselves to be able to project ourselves and become better people and pursue our dreams.
Girl, you mentioned a whole lot because sustainability is such a hot topic right now. And it seemed like it's like the catch-all buzzword, right? Because sustainability means something different. So that was going to be my next question, to understand like what sustainability means for you and Bijou. And you actually answered that. But one thing I want to go a little bit more in depth on as part of like your sustainability practices, you know, thinking about like your full supply chain and operations and thinking about the intentional formulations you're creating, how are you thinking about sustainable practices at the conception stage?
It's really hard because right now the consumers, they desire things that are sustainable, right? And for the most part, they think they want something that's sustainable. But if you actually see the consumers driven data analysis versus what they actually want, it doesn't correlate, right? They want more sustainable packaging. This is just an example, right? But right. Really, if you look at the consumer, they don't want to spend extra for sustainable packaging, right? So yes, they say that they do actually want it, but in reality, they don't really want it. So it was a really hard decision to make. Okay, how could we make our formulations sustainable, our packaging sustainable, where we could be in a competitive market pricing across the beauty industry as well, right? Especially in skincare, which is where Bijou is. And taking into consideration the wants and the needs of the consumers, but also where the manufacturer and the technology is for different manufacturers. For example, yes, we want to be more sustainable, but right now the technology is not there. Or if you get a specific packaging that is extremely sustainable, let's say 100% made out of sugarcane, right? Then you also have to take into account the chemical reactions that could happen if you put a moisturizer into the packaging that is just based out of sugarcane. This is just an example, right? So then do you have to coat it with something else so that there's no chemical reaction so that then you don't have hormone disruptors and so on, you know? So it's really thinking outside of the box. And if I do this, then what could happen? And that's how the decision was made based on our packaging, you know?
And even to like the products that you mentioned, like those hard conversations you're having with the contract manufacturers, you know, because you are your own formulator, right? So even understanding like, okay, this raw material is not really suitable or on brand for me, you know, or part of the Bijou story and the journey and the wellness or the trifecta that you mentioned. You know, so I think even understanding from a concept stage as a brand owner, you're thinking about the packaging, which is great at the conception stage, and you have to. That's another missed opportunity with brand owners, but also seeing with you being a brand owner and the formulator, those hard conversations you're having with the contract manufacturers to ensure that you understand the sustainable ingredients, the sustainable approach, sustainable operations, how they create the bulk, you know, before filling into your packaging. What does that look like to the refillable packaging? How do you maintain that? So it is a much larger conversation, you know, that a lot of brand owners, you know, really have to think through, you know, but it's always good to hear, you know, how brand owners are thinking about these things at the conception stage and not in development stage or really when it's commercialization, it's like, oh no, I didn't realize that. Yeah. So I want to ask you this question, still on sustainability. From your experience and just seeing what's in the marketplace, do you feel sustainability is a buzzword and it's a little bit of greenwashing? Or do you think that there's some truth to what we're seeing in the market?
I think it's both. There's a lot of greenwashing, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with like clean beauty. What does clean beauty really mean to you, right? Each, mm-hmm. like, for example, Sephora has its own definition, right? The EWG right. has its own definition, right? So it's like people, consumers, something that I've noticed is nowadays consumer facing people are confused. Why? Because each different platform or company has its own definition of what yep. clean beauty could be, or even what sustainability could be, right? So mm-hmm. how do you actually define sustainability, right?
Yeah.
Is it reduce, reuse, recycle, right? And recover? Or is it, oh, I'm just being sustainable because I'm just changing the packaging from, let's say, 100%, I guess this is going to get a little technical, but 100% PP now to 100% PCR, or later on, I'm going to change it to 100% rice, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, to what scope, right? Sustainability also encompasses the springs within your mm-hmm. packaging, right? Mm-hmm. What is it made out of? The caps. So it's extremely in depth, and a lot of customers and consumers don't really know this information, right? That and that's why they're so confused, because it's like, okay, well, I know that it's clean beauty, and clean beauty, they normalize it to only being this, when maybe a different company says that it's a different definition. So then that's why there's so much confusion, and it's so in depth, and it's just a whole, like, you know, new adventure to go into. And I could just speak about it for a long time,
yeah.
because it's, you know.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, Carolina, like, I have mixed reviews of like the buzzword sustainability, because there's a different interpretation to every company, the impact to the consumers, what's important to us as consumers, you know, and even with how you think about sustainability, even from like internal operations, right? So to your point, I think I'm a little bit mixed reviews. You know, I work in the packaging world. So people are like, well, how can you have mixed reviews and this is your lane? And I say, well, if you think about it, like for you, you know, with sustainable packaging, so to speak, you're thinking about reducing, reusing, recycling. Here in Georgia, where I live, our recycling infrastructure is not the same as Arizona, New York, even California. So if you don't have the right infrastructure in place and having to be uniform across the board, what does that mean? So here in Georgia, yeah, we recycle, but when you go to the recycling centers and you ask, and you're asking the workers, well, how are you deeming what's suitable for recycling? And they're telling you, we're throwing it all away in the trash because we don't have mm-hmm. enough workforce. We don't have time to separate the labels from the bottles because that's not mandated here in Georgia yet. You know, so these are conversations that where I'm like, I understand the importance of it. Don't get me wrong. However, I think there is a much bigger conversation to be had centered around sustainability to ensure we have the right infrastructure in place to accommodate for the recycling, reducing, reusing, refillable programs, to thinking about compostable packaging. How mm-hmm. we compost here in Georgia may not be the same as what California does. You know, so I think to that point, I still have mixed reviews and mixed thoughts on it, but we're still in this infancy stage here in the U.S. in yeah. transparency. So
to add on to that, right? Each state has a different legislation, right? So I was looking at mm-hmm. California, for example, specific metals in California could be recycled, right? So mm-hmm. let's say copper is recycled in California, but in Maine, it's not recycled. So then you're having that clash of, hey, here's going to be recyclable, but in this other state, it's not. As an example, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, Georgia. In Florida, about 3 years ago, they completely stopped recycling. Why? Because mm-hmm. recycling is extremely expensive, and they're throwing everything into the green bin, not the blue. The blue bin over there, it's for recycling materials. So now everything there, and it changes per county too. So you have to take that into consideration. Now, so you're thinking, oh, I'm going to go ahead and recycle, But there's no recycling system anymore because they don't have the budget anymore. And if you really think about it, consumers, yes, they want sustainability, but are they actually also being sustainable? For example, if I have this packaging, am I going to throw it in the garbage, or am I going to recycle this, right? If it's refillable, am I going to be lazy to fill it where I have the opportunity to fill it again myself and spend maybe a little bit less and then just put it again or not, right? Same thing, it happens with cell phones, just changing the subject a little bit, but where it's like, okay, my old cell phones, they, for the most part, they tend to stay at home and they get thrown away in the garbage, not necessarily in the recycling programs that we're supposed to go ahead and take it and get 4% payback and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. And with us now having like packaging EPRs laws that are coming out and still in this infancy stage, we only have four states that have officially passed the packaging EPR laws. So we still have a lot of work to do. And I think packaging EPR is something that is going to be important. But to that point, going back to what I mentioned, and like you and I agree on, if we don't have the right infrastructure in place to help support this, then how can we really push it? You know what I'm saying? So I think it's a much larger conversation. I'm not on Capitol Hill. So, guys, please don't come after me. Okay. Just a podcast host and just a business owner that's really speaking the truth about it. I do not sugarcoat. I'm very direct and just telling it like it is, But I think to that point, it's a much larger conversation. And I think you and I can agree on it, from infrastructure to understanding what sustainability means to those brands and really the impact from consumers. And so, last question, sustainability for you. So, thinking about Bijou and the importance around, the products that you're creating from formulations to the packaging to thinking about your full supply chain operations, how do you educate your consumers of what Bijou does as part of their sustainable practices?
So we educate our consumers through social media, so TikTok, Instagram. We're always posting about education and valuable content in regards to sustainability, teaching them about ingredients as we get growing, right? The growth sprout of Yishu, we're going to be able to provide more and more over time, right? We'll be able to have face-to-face events and providing all this educational content and valuable practices. I'm also extremely approachable. So if one of my customers, I get this very often on the Bijou DMs, hey, what does this ingredient does? And they ask me questions. So then I feel inspired to answer the question. And if you're having an allergic reaction because you could be double using a specific ingredient. If you overuse that ingredient, it's not helpful, right? So you have to have an understanding of, am I using this ingredient too much? Am I using this ingredient too little? And so on. So it inspires me to teach them, to tell them what is good for you, what it's not, especially for those having sensitive and reactive skins like myself.
Yes, like I think that's really profound, to really educate consumers around sustainable practices and even understanding down to each ingredient. Because, most people, I have not heard anybody come on the podcast yet to talk about how you could be overusing or not using enough of one ingredient. And I think that's something that really requires more education around the products and understanding what is your regimen? What does it look like for AM, for PM? How are you using this vitamin C? What's the percentage of that vitamin C? For me, I have hyperpigmentation. That's really my area of opportunity, with utilizing skincare. So if I came to you and I'm maybe using like your Hydrating Dew moisturizer and your cleanser, you may ask me, well, if you're trying to help target hyperpigmentation, what is the percentage of ascorbic acid you may be using versus what may be in your formulations? So I think that's really big, to really educate consumers, even down to like the raw ingredients and understanding their regimen is really
Yeah.
big.
And also to take into consideration, right? A lot of customers and consumers that don't buy just, for example, from Bijou, they have Bijou, they may have Drunk Elephant, they may have Rare Beauty, right? And then it's like, okay, what's in the makeup that you're putting on? But this is just a specific to your night routine. Maybe they just like the Bijou Hydrating Dew and then they like the Drunk Elephant night routine, right? It's like, do those ingredients are good for your sensitive skin? I know that Bijou is, but are the ingredients for Drunk Elephant and Bijou together? Are they good together?
Makes sense. Makes sense. And I think that's part of that sustainable practice, you know, because I went through your website, guys. Her website will be down in the show notes for you all to go check it out. A beautiful website, a lot of education around there too. But she has a page specifically on sustainability that's talking about the sustainable practices, the Bijou trifecta that she mentioned earlier in this segment, all the way from ingredients, where they're sourced from, because I want to get into that a little bit, how some of your raw ingredients are sourced from South America to keep that heritage and that correlation with like your roots, even to the, like the packaging. So guys, make sure if any brand that you're working with, but respectfully for Bijou, check out their sustainability page because there is a lot of education around it. And I found out some interesting information around their products too, as well as some of their raw ingredients. So last thing I'll ask you around like your raw ingredients. So you mentioned on your website that some of these raw ingredients are coming from South America. So what are some of the challenges you may be experiencing with getting some of those exotic, exclusive ingredients from South America to be produced here in America, North America rather?
Well, some of the challenges are the import, right? Just for example, chontaduro is an ingredient born and raised in the lowlands of Colombia by indigenous communities in Colombia. And it's been used for hundreds, well, I guess not hundreds, but a couple centuries of years within my family as well. And it's a powerhouse, right? It has vitamin A, vitamin C. Antioxidants are really good for brightening your skin, helping your barrier. And the challenges that I've seen, right, is importing here to the United States, okay? What's the fee, right? The tariffs that you have to pay, the lead times on those raw ingredients, and they make it so special because this is one of the gem for Bijou, right? Chontaduro is not used in mainstream skincare, and I wanted to represent something because I was actually born in Colombia, so it means a lot to represent ingredients that come from South America itself.
I think that's big. And nobody really talks about the challenges with imports. You know, people always think it's, you know, getting capital, which that is a area of opportunity and it's a challenge, right? Especially for those who are Black, Indigenous people of color, you know, but to that point, getting like your raw materials from South America, staying true to your heritage and your culture to bring here and having it be incorporated within the manufacturing process, I think is really big. And so understanding like with some of these raw materials and the lead times, on average, what could the lead times be? And can it impact the schedules you have for like launching your products and new packaging?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. I mean, there's other ingredients that could have or that have a longer lead times, but it's really important because this specific ingredient that I talked about, chontaduro, it's in all of our products and it's the main differentiation of our line as well.
Okay, fair enough. And so with you being the founder, the brand owner, or AKA the head of everything, you're the head of formulation, head of product development, head of packaging development, head of marketing, all of these things. What is one piece of advice you would give to a fellow brand owner or an entrepreneur to stay afloat of everything?
That's a great question. And advice that I would say is always be learning and continuously evolving for sure. I think it's crucial to establish a strong foundation for your brand, whether it's in the beauty industry, in the athletic industry. You can't just flourish, right, in a year. You have to create a foundation. It may take 2 or 3 years, but you're building that foundation so that that brand stands still, even if something else happens. And you, for example, a domino effect that something may fail, it's okay. You could still stay standing and continue to move forward, right? Also actively working on improving your weaknesses. So whether it's mastering in marketing, financial management, logistics, being a well-rounded entrepreneur, I think it's essential for your success, right? Remember that during the first couple of years, you're going to be handling all these aspects of your business initially, all yourself. So invest time in developing diverse skill sets to avoid being a wannapreneur. Like, I want to do this and I really want to do this, but I don't know how to do much, right? And that's why a lot of entrepreneurs say that it's so hard and challenging. And I do agree with them, right? Because the first year, maybe we have we're experts in five different skills, but we need to be experts in 10 different skills. So it's the leap of time, right? The exponential growth that we have to build over time to be good at all of this, to get informed, to get educated, so that we could actually be able to succeed.
Yeah, I think that's big. And you mentioned two points, even though we said one piece, but I think those are both relevant to always stay learning and to learn, always work on improving with your weaknesses. So I think those are two big, great pieces of advice that's applicable in any industry, regardless of stage, career track, professional skill set. So I think that's good. So let me ask you, how long has Bijou been in existence?
Bijou has been in existence since 2018.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
And that's where I was building the foundation, but it didn't launch until actually last year, and it was a small launch, but this year we have fully launched as of 2024.
Wow. And so just even seeing like your own evolution with the brand from when it first started as an idea in 2018 to launch a soft launch in 2023. So now like a full hard launch. So Bijou is now available to everybody. You know, you have new packaging, new aesthetics, but great customer feedback. What have you learned in your own evolution of creating this brand?
Oh my God. So honestly, it's been a whole journey. And that's why I was focusing on my foundation. I think that's why it's so important, because if I wouldn't have built on my foundation, I would have already gone bankrupt. I would have made so many mistakes. I wouldn't have been informed. And that's why I'm extremely explicit about this. I've learned about certifications. So EWG, B Corp, Cosmoprof. I mean, there's so many tools out there that you may not even know about that could be so helpful for anyone in the beauty industry in regards to raw materials, what is harmful, knowing the European standards to be able to grow right in Europe. The standards in South America, each country has its own different standards. So it's all, everything's bridged and gapped together. Packaging, right? Yes, you wanna give the best to your consumers, but really, what does data actually tell you? Are they actually saying and acting on what they're saying, or is this kind of like not really hand in hand and they have to meet at some point? And I think that's where the consumers are trying to right now. Sustainability, they say that they want it, but their actions is right here. So we need to bring them together so that everything's in alignment, right? On their actual needs, their requests, and their actions.
Yeah, I think that's big, and appreciate you for sharing that. And so when you talked about how you started and you learned a lot through your own evolution of Bijou, I have to ask you about capital, because we talked a little bit about how products in this space, people think I can just whip up my own blend and put it out there, which you can, right? But if you're doing it and doing it intentionally and then having exclusive raw materials, like with products coming from South America, that requires capital. So from your own experience, how has access as a brand owner with getting capital been, especially as a Latina woman?
Yeah, honestly, it's been extremely difficult so far. We have not gotten any capital from anyone. It's been funded by me, myself, and I.
You've been 100%. Bootstrapping.
Yes, 100%. Yes, wow. I've been bootstrapping the whole way.
Wow.
I've been like, literally, I have like a garbage bag where when I first started, it was a white garbage bag where I moved out of my house, because I was like, well, either I pursue my dreams and do the sacrifice, or I'm not going to pursue my dreams and stay stuck in the industry. And I didn't want to do that, right? I didn't want to get let go, experience getting let go and just being a number in a big corporation and having that emotional instability of, you know, taking it personal. But also I wanted to make a difference in my field and the industry of skincare, right? Helping, uplifting, providing confidence, providing that self-love, providing those tools that as a young adult I never had, with depression, anxiety, and how I could be helpful for others so that we could grow together. So definitely lots of crying. Lots of crying, not actually having a place to live. That's the honest truth. Like, I had to rent my house, you know, rented 100%, not having a place to live, jumping from place to place, and not knowing where I was going to be the next week, being basically homeless to a point where I just didn't have money, like literally being overdrafted, having $1 was a lot of money, you know. So it's been a lot, and it's a continuous process and progression over time. But and then having different when I first started, I wasn't just doing Bijou. I was doing Bijou. I was doing immigration paperwork so that I could help me fund my funds. I was dog sitting. I was basically helping out with, I was also working for as a freelancer, right? In logistics, supply chain. So I had different hats, and I still had to do the Bijou hat. So imagine all of that. Barely getting any sleep, working 24/7. I mean, till this day, I still work a lot. And that's something that I do want to say is make sure that you take care of your mental health, because working a lot is great for you to continue to pursue your dreams and grow. But if you're not okay within yourself and your mental health, then you as the CEO and the brand owner are going to clash.
And I can feel that because I've had my business full time now for 3 years. And a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of tears, a lot of outbursts, and, you know, to be honest, but I bootstrapped my company too, you know, and continuously doing so, you know, so I think we all start at bootstrapping, right? But we're always assessing how can we get capital, especially when you're a minority, right? Like you and I, we are first women, and then I'm Black, you're Latina. So our access to getting capital, it's more challenging, you know, because we're a lower percentage of those who get capital, you know. So it's like, how do you find access to capital to those who actually see the value in what we do and what we offer, especially as minority women? And so I'll share some resources with you. I do want you to, I don't know if you plan on going into retail, but I would like for you to consider 15% Pledge, because they've been more intentional about women of people of color getting placement into retail and dedicating 15% of shelf space, like in Ulta, big retail stores, you know, to house your products. So look there. I'll share some other resources with you as well, but look at eCornell University. They have a really great entrepreneurship program, and they share out thousands of different grants and ways to get capital. Fearless Fund is another one. So countless others, but I'll share anything I get for you, because it's really about sharing in this network, because there should be no reason why access for us is more challenging than some of our counterparts.
I totally agree. And I have like a spreadsheet of all the grants that I've been applying, and I continue to apply, right? Because you're going to, it's normal for you to get rejected, but also to take into consideration is the, what I would say is, okay, how is it, is the markets oversaturated, right? Like, are they choosing companies that are bigger than you? So you also have to take into account that, because I've applied to a lot of grants and a lot of like pitches where maybe I wasn't ready at that time, and maybe I am ready now, you know? So I also understand not just my perspective, but their perspective too. They want to provide, you know, help to those businesses that are showing maybe they're bigger, they're growing faster, and so on.
Absolutely. And that's a very good point too, because a lot of times we think rejection is the end of the road, but it's, we're not being mindful of the other aspects, you know, behind the scenes too. Appreciate you for sharing that. And so as we're wrapping up for today, I want to ask you two final questions. So you mentioned how, you know, you're working 24/7 still, you know, it's like the Instagram phrase, I left my 9-to-5 job to be working 24/7 as an entrepreneur to pursue your dreams, right? So understanding how you're working around the clock, you're still bootstrapping, you're trying to get access to capital, you're the head of everything, and you're always working on your own weaknesses. And I don't really want to say weaknesses, but areas of opportunity, you know, for you as a business owner. How do you stay true to like your mental health and incorporate a proper nutrition and diet plan?
This is a great question. I am extremely strict. So I have to have, number one, clear like date and time of what I'm going to be doing, where, and if I have to switch my times, I do that. But for me, moving is key. So I have to go on walks. I have to definitely work out. I weightlift every day. So I change my routines depending on if it's upper body or lower body, but that for me has been my number one antidepressant ever. Weightlifting every day, going on walk. Motion is lotion. So for anyone not exercising or not doing their walks, I highly recommend it because it would get rid of your pains. It also will help with your ligaments, making them stronger. I'm also extremely, because I had anxiety and depression, I almost have a PhD in nutrition because I've researched and I've done so much to understand my temple, which is my body. And we have to incorporate healthy foods for us. So eating a balanced diet, which is prebiotics, probiotics. I stay away from any like medicines or pills, and I provide myself with prebiotics and probiotics. And it could be from yogurt, it could be for probiotics or cottage cheese. For prebiotics, it could be chicory fiber, legumes, green vegetables, garlics, onions. And then definitely learning to manage my stress. I just being honest, I practice, right, self-care physically with my fitness, but you also have to practice self-care physically with your mind. So I go to counseling, right? I talk about my stressful, not necessarily that there's something wrong with me. It's just I talk about my stressful days and I cry about my stresses. I have a very good, loving, and supporting family with me, and I could rely on them, obviously, on especially my boyfriend for sure. He's always there for me. And if I have like a horrible day, sometimes I just try to step away, like I take a 5-minute break. And yes, fortunately, I do work 24/7. Sometimes I don't go to sleep but for 2 hours, and I just have to do it the next day. And I just have to suck it up. And then I try to recover, limit my sugar intake and processed foods because they're extremely bad for you. They're super bad for your gut health, and they grow harmful bacteria. So for me, as a person who has anxiety, if I'm having a really horrible day and I have high sugar intake, that's going to make it even worse. Making sure that I stay hydrated. I, for some reason, have never drank anything but water. And I do it all the time. So that's something that I don't even have to think about, right? And for those of you who could sleep a lot, just sleep 8 to 9 hours. At least do it for me, please.
I know, do it for us, okay? Do it for us. I think because my max, I just realized for my own self, and everything that you mentioned, like the weightlifting, I used to do CrossFit, did all of that, staying, having incorporated motion, especially when you're confined to a desk and you're looking at the computer, it's like, okay, I need to take a break, take a step away, doing the 20-20-20 that my optometrist tells me about, 20 seconds looking off screen, looking 20 feet away for 20 seconds. Those little things matter. But the biggest thing that you mentioned that I think is really important is speaking with a counselor or a therapist, right? So that is really important at the end of the day. And so as we're wrapping up for our last question, you mentioned gut health. So what piece of advice would you give for those listening, what they should be doing to help with improving their gut health?
Eating healthy. I like to stay away from anything that's like vitamins because you could find all your vitamins in food. That's just the honest truth, right? And your gut and your brain are intricately connected with each other. So a healthy gut means that your neurotransmitter production is going to create serotonin and dopamine, which is going to create great mental health and mood regulation. And you could do this with, for example, broccoli, spinach, salmon. I'm allergic to seafood, but salmon, avocado, they're really great for you, right? And if you have an amazing digestive system, right, then you're gonna feel great. Your mood is gonna increase. You're gonna have more energy. Your mental fog is gonna go away. And don't take me wrong, most humans, they could only concentrate for maximum 2 to 4 hours at a time, and then they need to take a break. You're not like working back to back 8 hours. There has to be a breaking, breaking point where you take a break and then you're like, okay, now my creative mind is back as well.
Really big. And so, guys, all of Carolina's information and more about Bijou, her skincare collection, and how she's incorporating nutrition, mental wellness into the mindful products that she has available on her website will be down in the show notes for you all, as well as her direct LinkedIn information to connect with her. She's very approachable. We met at Cosmoprof and hit it off in our first interaction. So she is definitely approachable. So make sure you do contact her as well. And so guys, as you know, if you've been rocking with our episodes in the past, you know, we like to end off with our power round. So quick lightning speed, 60 seconds on the clock to ask our guests about some of their favorites. And so Carolina shared, she is a twin. She's super knowledgeable in weight training and nutrition, like she talked about. So we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock and ask Carolina about some of her favorites. So you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay. So as a twin, have you ever switched places?
Yes.
And if so, how old were you and where were you?
At school with a teacher. My sister hadn't done her homework, so I gave her my homework, but we got discovered because my notebook had my name, and when the teacher gave her a grade, right, she got an A, for example, and then as she closed the notebook, it said my name, and then she realized it was me.
Wow, that's funny. It reminds me of Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan. Okay, next question. So since you're really big into weight training, what are the top three body weight exercises you recommend everyone to do daily?
Step ups, you could do this at home. Romanian deadlifts, you could also do this at home. Just make sure that you have good form. And the last one, I would say single leg squats. Those are really good. And it also builds up your knees, your ligaments, and stronger legs means you could have more muscle, which means that your body fat reduces.
Okay. So we're at time. So last question, what are three words you would use to describe your product and packaging?
Vibrantly authentic, eco-chic, and emotionally transformative.
I love those. I like that. You should put those three on your website, okay, on the sustainability page.
Okay.
So awesome. So, Ms. Carolina, thank you so much for being our powerhouse guest for today. Share how everybody can get in contact with you and if you have any promotions going on as well.
Everyone could find us at bejou.co on TikTok, Instagram, and our website is www.bejou.co. We're also in LinkedIn, we're on Facebook, and right now we have 10% off for anyone who subscribes to our newsletters. So please feel free to contact us if you have any questions. We're here for you.
Awesome. And guys, all of her information will be down in the show notes with the direct link. So you go check out her website, subscribe to the newsletter, get 10% off, as well as to connect with her directly on LinkedIn. And so guys, as we are wrapping up for today, we spoke with brand owner, founder, and CEO of Bejou, Ms. Carolina Lopez. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the last thing I'll leave you with is always be willing to learn and actively improve on your weaknesses. You heard from Ms. Carolina here on right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. So guys, thank you so much. Make sure you do follow, like, and subscribe to all of our platforms and share this with at least 5 people in your network, because our net worth increases based upon our network. So talk to you soon.